Okay, we're scheduled for a break right now. It's a little bit before 3, so let's come back at 10 after and get going a little early because we've got some good meaty subjects after the break.
Okay.
Let me call the meeting back to order. Okay, number 9. This is going to be a fun one. Extremely interesting. We've seen this presentation a couple times, I think, during my term on the commission so far. And our Carilion Bear Dogs always, as I was saying, are far more charismatic than the commission. So in the past, we've had the Bear Dogs come in and back the room, and everyone starts turning around and focusing all their attention to the back of the room. So, because they're beautiful animals. So, looking forward to this. Deputy Cenci, do you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. The men and the dogs behind me are far more charismatic than I am as well, so I won't be long, but I did want to give a quick introduction before these officers get started so that I could paint the landscape just a little bit for you. So, there's a growing misconception among some that there's a wildlife utopia somewhere where potentially dangerous wildlife, to include those that occupy the upper portions of the food chain, can be relocated. And, you know, they think that that's a place that they can live without territorial conflict with other like animals, damage to property, or causing further concern for human safety. I recall a very well-meaning person that called in after a bear removal situation complaining about our action, and her suggestion was that we just plant more berries. And it was an interesting discussion, but it just sort of told me that there's a lot of education to be done, and these officers do an incredible job of educating the public. And you'll hear from Captain Wharton with respect to our role in that regard. And then you'll hear from these other officers with respect to their role in sort of carrying out wildlife conflict resolution. I mean, we're faced with diminishing relocation options and negative views by some when we're forced to euthanize an animal. And we see those situations as unfortunate, but there are times when that's necessary. And our toolbox, you know, given those problems, has been looking pretty empty before these dogs came along, before these gentlemen helped bring forward a very vital program. So the KBDs came on scene, and you'll hear these officers describe not only how these dogs help locate offending or a problem bear, but how they're used to reprogram bear behavior. So call them behavioralists, I don't know. But definitely a newer strategy in Washington State that seems to be getting national attention and seems to be working relatively well. And, of course, there are times when that technique's appropriate and times when that technique's not appropriate. Maybe less obvious is the benefit to officer safety. You know, imagine, you know, going into the bushes after something that's naturally blending in with its environment and it's injured, it's unhappy, not a good time. I know that these officers, significant others, wives, spouses, girlfriends, certainly appreciate the fact that a Carilion Bear Dog is not the same as trying to house half a dozen hounds. And I know the neighbors appreciate that as well. So they're a great asset. You'll hear more about that. And so Captain Wharton, to my left here, we'll take it from here.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair, members of the Commission, my name is Mike Wharton. I'm the captain out of Region 1 for the enforcement program. And I'm kind of reminded of a Johnny Carson guest that said, never be part of the Pet Act because they steal the show. So that's sage advice. I wish I could follow it. What I'm going to do is just give an overview of the enforcement program's role in response to dangerous wildlife, kind of give you a breadth and scope of what we do. This will be a kind of at the 30,000 feet level. And some of the distinct differences between some of the species we deal with on the east side and the west side, and some of the issues we're facing. We classify dangerous wildlife as black bear, grizzly bear, gray wolf, cougar, coyote, and moose, and sometimes deer and elk, just kind of versed on where they're at. Dangerous wildlife calls are a priority for the enforcement program. And what we try and do is get back to a complaining party. And many of these calls are very emotional. People are distressed. So our first and foremost job to those folks is to let them know that we're there for them and that we will hopefully provide them some action that will resolve their problem. And oftentimes on those phone calls, in the conversations, we try and scope out what the situation is and do what we would term as kind of a risk assessment. That's kind of what drives our policy. And sometimes those calls, the threat is real. Sometimes it's perceived. Cougar on the fringe of Spokane that's out in the back 40 is perceived as an imminent threat, where that same cat in the back 40 in some of our northeastern counties is just another day. And oftentimes in those calls, we find out what maybe is causing the issue, what sort of attractants. I'd like to say we don't really have wildlife problems. We've got people management problems oftentimes. So these are the total number of complaints that we handled statewide. These are the two primary species that we deal with routinely in complaints, bear complaints and cougar complaints. Bear complaints, as I said earlier, are often a case where we have human management issues, where people have attractants intentionally or unintentionally that is the cause. And oftentimes in those scoping phone calls that we make with people, we can kind of get to the root cause. And generally, some of those we can resolve on the phone, but others we do a on-site response, and that provides folks a little reassurance, and if there is a real threat, we can chart a strategy to address it. And as I said, most of the bear issues are attractant problems. Cougars, those generally I can characterize those as perceived threat, real threat, and livestock depredations. We do have a fair number of livestock depredations. It's been my experience, mostly small livestock, the backyard goats, sheep, very few cows do we have depredated by cougar, but those are real. We respond to all these generally in person, the cougar complaints, unless it's just a sighting. Just kind of the east side perspective, as I mentioned, bear and cougar, but two unique species that we deal with on the east side in Spokane primarily are moose. We have a large population of moose in the state, and they end up migrating into the city. And this is kind of a classic case of where if we had some growth management, we left some of these corridors in place, chances are we wouldn't have these problems. In Spokane, for example, we have really one natural corridor, and that is the Spokane River. And we have moose wander that river, but when they hit I-90, there's no underpasses. They're stuck. They get up against the fence. They migrate back in the town. And that necessitates an action because they get penned in or hemmed in by traffic. They get frightened, and they can be a real threat or an issue with traffic, and we respond to those. We immobilize them and relocate them. It's a fairly daunting task to do. We usually end up with five or six officers, the department vet, trailers, and so forth. And it takes a lot of time. And we generally do about 20 or 30 of those in the greater Spokane area. And then that upper right-hand animal, I think you've had a few discussions about gray wolves, but they now are in the landscape, of course, and region 1, 2, and 3 are ground zero, and we're starting to deal with gray wolf issues. Part of all the notoriety, the publicity, we're receiving a lot of wolf calls. Mostly they're mistaken identity. We scope those out on the phone. They're often coyotes. We also have wolf-dog hybrid issues, feral dogs that are now all being identified as wolf issues. So we're responding to those and scoping them out and ferreting them out. And some are, of course, actual wolf sightings as populations expand. And I should say probably right from the get-go, and I missed it, coupled with all these responses is an educational component. When we talk with people, we talk about the hazards, real and perceived, what actions they can take to prevent. Every on-the-ground response, depending on the animal, will give out a brochure to the party. Those that we handle directly over the phone, we refer them to our webpage. We've got a comprehensive webpage. It's called Living with Wildlife. They can scan through that for the appropriate species, and there's a lot of good information on that webpage and in these folders that people can follow, particularly on attractants. And if they do have an interaction, what steps should they take? We kind of categorized our dangerous wildlife issues as human health and safety, real and perceived, and property loss. That first photograph on the left is actually a result of a moose that was kind of hemmed in by traffic. People started to gather around it. It started to migrate through and got pushed, and it was hurdling a number of cars. This one, it didn't quite clear the hurdle. put a leg through that windshield. The second photograph is kind of a classic. There was an attractant apparently behind that wall that black bears got into. For region one, this is a breakdown of our species and the number of responses. It has remained fairly stable over the last couple years. Sometimes, at least on bear complaints, it's somewhat a product of how good a spring, what available forage is out there, that if it's a dry year, we do find bears coming down into irrigated landscapes looking for a meal. But if it's a fairly good bear year, bear complaints are usually less. Moose complaints, and so far that's the total number of our gray wolf confirmed complaints. I would mention nuisance complaints. It occupies a lot of our time. We get people like everywhere that plan a nice, beautiful home out in the middle of prime habitat, and then they call us when a moose is on their ornamentals. And we usually walk them through it on the phone and what sort of actions we can provide them, but oftentimes their request is pretty unrealistic. One of the new tools that we've utilized, at least for our herding and hazing of moose, we've started utilizing paint guns, the air compressed paint guns. There's a pop with it, and there's a stinging to it, and that has been very successful in herding and hazing moose. And on a lot of these nuisance calls, we've directed folks to buy a paint gun, and some of them take it hard at it and have used them and called us back and said that was the greatest thing that you ever suggested, and the moose hasn't been around since. So that's a new tool for us. 400 hours this past year we've occupied with complaints. Types of responses on real specific problem animals. We do have a permit system. If it's a cougar that's displaying abnormal behavior, it's up on somebody's step, has taken their dog or something, we have a permit system to either for them to utilize a hound hunter if the location is correct and they can do that, or we have agency lethal action.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Jennings?
I'm just looking at the number of complaints and the number of hours, and you know, that's not much more than 2 hours per complaint. I'm thinking if you actually have to go out on scene for any fraction of these, and if you have multiple people dealing with a moose or something, that seems a little low for the 400 plus officer hours.
It does. And I think that's a product of a commissioner of us under-reporting it in our system. That is low. We talked about that prior to the presentation, but that's what our CODI system reflected, sir. So
that just goes back to show it's important to fill out all those timesheets properly, because
it is very
management will come back later and analyze it to see things.
Exactly.
With the new enforcement program, that's been a little bit of a challenge to get everybody in the field to fill out all those forms that are asked for at the time.
Well, I think we're, by and large, we're institutionalizing it more and more, but as with all of our officers, they're shifting back and forth between various demands, and oftentimes those shifts aren't being captured. They're being lumped, frankly.
I just thought this was a good opportunity to say that out loud. So,
I have the deputy chief right behind me that will remind me to make sure that we code correctly. Captain Huebner could not be here. He's attending a memorial service for our regional manager in Region 4 and was going to give this portion of the presentation. So I'll talk about my familiarity and some crib notes that Captain Huebner provided me. Most of the West Side complaints evolve around that urban-rural interface issues, and the two primary species they're dealing with are with bear and cougar. These species are showing up oftentimes in the green belts, and people are seeing them. They become fairly high profile with media, and they necessitate a response by us. They're not necessarily a human safety issue, but more of a perceived human safety issue. And that's where one of the tools, the Carilion Bear Dog, has been very helpful in. Hosted the complaint levels for the past 2 years in Region 4, again with our two primary species, bear and cougar. Some of the same issues for Region 4. Coyotes on the east side are generally not perceived as a major threat, but more and more in these urban settings they are, and in fact they can be a threat. They are one of the species that does nip and bite people. So we work with Wildlife Services in a partnership on some of those urban responses to coyotes. Bottom picture, of course, represents not a typical way a bear should be acting, but some of the issues they're dealing with, habituation and so forth in those urban settings. 600 and some officers, 600 plus hours for the officers, they're probably coding a little better than we are on the east side. One of the issues, of course, and I'll talk about it a little bit more, is some of the societal and demographic demands are now pushing us for non-lethal control, mobilization, relocation, and as the deputy chief mentioned, there is not this paradise of relocation areas where they may become a problem for somebody else. But some of the work, the Carilion Bear Dogs and the hard release issues, we're hoping to curtail some of that reoffending. I put this in here, population response, and I do want to say we don't have a predator control program by any means. This is not what this is meant to be. We We have a combination of response to particular situations. All these species, with the exception of wolves, we have hunting seasons on. For those particular problem situations that do require some sort of euthanasia, we do have depredation and kill permits. And so I guess in this, what we've tried to do is create a tool bag for our officers to tailor their response to individual situations and what those situations call for. Again, herding and hazing, that's often a very good response by our officers on a lot of these situations. Paintball guns, as I mentioned earlier, is a new tool we're utilizing. The control permits, immobilization and relocation. All of our officers do take immobilization training or familiarize themselves with the dart guns, the drugs, the proper doses, and so forth. There's, with a few exceptions, and in moose, for example, the particular drug that we use is carfentanil. There are only a few people in the agency licensed to utilize that. One is the department vet and one is a research bio. So their presence on those situations is always necessary. Everybody has seen photographs of culvert trapping and relocation. We do utilize that when we have bears, particularly that have become habituated, and no matter what we do to correct the attractants, those bears keep coming around, we'll set culvert traps. And in our region, Region 1, and I can't speak for Region 4, those traps are going full-time during the summer months and spring months. Emerging issues, wolves on the landscape. This is not unfamiliar country for you folks, but that particular picture on the left is a photograph of a livestock operation in northeastern Washington where we did have wolves present. That particular rancher was going to be calfing in a small lot, about 3 to 5 acres, so we took proactive step. We put fladry around that facility, and there were no intrusions after that fladry was installed. I also will mention this last year we had a comprehensive training program for all of our enforcement staff on livestock depredation, where Carter Niemeyer, who is the foremost expert from retired employee of Wildlife Services, gave out. We had a practicum as well as classroom training for all of our staff. So if we do have to respond to a livestock depredation, we'll be much better prepared to make a determination what was the cause. Challenges, we've talked about this before, is increasing human population, more and more urban wildland interface issues starting to surface all over the state, changing social values. There are more and more, particularly in the urban areas, adverse to anything but immobilization and relocation. Conflicting and unrealistic public demands is an issue for us. So many people expect us to be there in 10 minutes, and they expect an immediate answer. I guess that's just our today's society, but oftentimes we don't have an immediate answer. Oftentimes these are repetitive events that they're there 1 minute, an offending animal, and they may not return for some time, so we work with the party to make sure, or at least minimize the risk for a future offense. But there is this somewhat expectation that we're going to have a permanent solution for these folks. And that kind of dovetails into reduced officer staffing. We do not have like a city PD or the state patrol 24/7 coverage. We do have people on call at all times, but many times these events call for multiple people, and it takes time to assemble folks to respond. So we are often criticized, and often officers that have large geographic areas, they get a call and do make an immediate response. That immediate response can still be a four-hour drive away. So that's always an issue. And again, we talked about it a little bit, real and perceived threats of public safety. Again, a lot of these calls are emotional, and our job when we talk to people is to try and reassure them that this is not the likelihood of a human attack or attack on your livestock or your pet is relatively small, and we kind of try and walk them through that. And oftentimes, that's probably the most beneficial thing that we do with all these complainants. Well, with that, I'll kind of lead into the main event. Officer Nicholas York is going to discuss one of the new tools that we are using to great benefit in Acrylia and Bear Dogs, and I'll have him introduce the other handlers.
Thank you, Captain Wharton. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, thanks for having us here and putting up with our dogs and my poor oratory skills. But as we get started here, this is a presentation. It's a kind of a collage, a collaboration of a bunch of different people on the Acrylia and Bear Dog team, mostly from the three individuals here that you see with us. Rich Beausoleil and Cash are on the right, based out of Wenatchee, and Officer Chris Mosetter and Savu, who is Coulter's brother, my dog's brother, they're based out of the I-90 corridor in King County. So first here pictured on the screen is our senior and beloved and infamous Acrylia and Bear Dog handler, Officer Bruce Richards. He is a character, to say the least, so this was a representative photo of this part of the program and a good transition. So a lot of us that have dealt with human-bear conflicts over the years, for years and years, this becomes a repetitive, cyclic issue to deal with, and those of us that really care about the resource and what we're tasked to protect and work with bears a lot have come to realize, even through our formal training and just on the ground, that bears are really large-brained, long-lived species. They take care of their young for long periods of time. They have similar habits to humans. They look like a human when you skin them out. They eat like a human in a lot of ways, and they're just being bears most of the time. So it gets really hard on the officers themselves and the field people to actually just go around and euthanize and see bears needlessly killed just because somebody perhaps left out a bird feeder or a garbage can unsecured. So it really wears on us. It's not like euthanizing or putting down a deer. They're a lot more cognitive. They're higher intelligence. So early on, some of us started experimenting with dogs, of anything we could get our hands on, whether they're hounds or a Labrador, trying to have aversive conditioning or hazing take place and try to have some behavioral modification. Then eventually Rocky Spencer was the real inventor here for our Washington. He brought Mishka over from the Wind River Bear Institute, the first Acrylia and Bear Dog in the state. In the lower left is a picture, an early picture of Rocky Spencer and Mishka with Officer Bruce Richards doing a hard release on a bear right there. And so this is where how the Acrylia and Bear Dog program basically got its roots in our state and where we got started from. And to make a long story short, this is where we're at today. This is our 2012 WDFW-KBD team. So left to right is Spencer with Officer Dustin Prater, stationed in North Pierce County. Savu and Officer Mosetter that are present here today on the I-90 corridor in King County. Coulter and myself on the Highway 2 corridor in Snohomish, King County. Mishka and Officer Richards in South King County. Indiana Jones and Davy Jones in Whatcom County. And Cash and biologist Rich Beausoleil out of Wenatchee, who is a great team member. He's a cross-program worker. He's been very collaborative and pulls a lot of the weight for the Acrylia and Bear Dog team here in the state and the agency. So we're very protective of Rich, and we remind him that he's part of our team all the time and can't leave. So now starting a new program is always a lot of work, and starting a program that's not proven and maybe a little bit cutting edge and a little controversial is even more work, and keeping it off the ground, especially when there's no funds allocated for such a program. But Captain Bill Huebner is a real trooper, and he's been a real supporter and basically the reason we're here today. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make it. He's supposed to be giving this presentation, and somehow I got here in front of you. But he's attending Region 4 manager Bob Everett's wife's memorial service, unfortunately, today. But I know he regrets not being able to be here. But it's been I've seen a lot of what Captain Bill Huebner's gone through and been there right with him through a lot of this. It's been a lot of work to have this program get up and running, but the benefits far outweigh any cost or time or effort we put in after hours work that's gone into it. Everybody on the team has put a ton of work into it, and just getting a dog is a big commitment. So here's how we're deployed throughout the state right now, pretty much concentrating around the urban areas, and Cash is over there by himself doing research and having fun in Chelan County. But so the Carilion Bear dogs are essentially a rare ancient breed of dog. They're a big game hunting dog, basically, to simplify things. They are they're more versatile than a hound dog, and I dare say they're more intelligent than a hound dog. We don't have aggressive attack with human situations like you get from a police dog. Our dogs are incredibly well socialized. Our sole source of pups so far has been from the Wind River Bear Institute in Montana. They do a fantastic job socialization of the dogs from the start. From day one, they have little kids in the litter box with them. And then once we get the dogs after that training and they're graded out and they come out to the handlers, we continue with that socialization. We're really adamant about getting our dogs in contact with as many little kids and different people. They get mobbed and school presentations and public fairs and everything else, and that literally thousands of our constituents and residents of the state of Washington, tens of thousands, have been kissed by a WDFW bear dog. This is no doubt, the public loves them. They're fuzzy little guys, and they're sweet. These are the sweetest dogs you'll ever come across. You put them in front of a bear or a mountain lion, and the switch flips, and they look like Cujo on steroids. But then they come off that, 30 seconds later, they're kissing a toddler that just watched the bear release again. So they're incredibly versatile, and they can switch gears, and they're intelligent. And I can't say enough about them. I came into this program with a real objective mind. I wasn't sure I was a true believer yet, but the benefits outweigh the costs exponentially of what we get as an agency and for the public from these dogs. Everybody always asks, what kind of bear dog was that and where did it come from? Well, they're Carilion bear dogs, and there's Carilia. It's a disputed region between Finland and Russia, and they're not very happy with each other. We'll move on after that. But so the KBDs in Washington, the primary use we use them for now through the Enforcement Bureau side is where most of us are, obviously, and even Rich Bosley works with us and covers that enforcement ground in his area, is the non-lethal resolution of human-bear conflicts. That's our primary thing we do with them. They have a lot of other utilities and other things we use them for, but that's the number one thing we do. We get improved public education, response, and service. We also use these dogs for shepherding, hazing, and even aversive conditioning at times. We don't have time to get into those definitions right now, but not only in bears and lions, we also end up using them on, they've been used on sheep, bighorn sheep, moose, and even elk at times, hazing them away from highways perhaps, saving a bighorn sheep herd from more accidents. There's just endless things. I know I'm going to miss a lot going through this, but they improve our enforcement investigations. A lot of these Carilion bear dogs have started big game investigations by evidence they've found, and they've ended big game investigations by evidence they've found for not only the handlers but adjacent officers. And us as game wardens, we know where to go out and work hunters. A lot of times we know where there's activity and we know where there's possible poaching going on, but we'll drive or walk right by a lot of things that now that we have a dog or a tool with us, we're like, holy smokes, how did that get there? It's just around the corner of the brush, and they're just a great tool. Just once you get used to them being with you, it's just like having another tool on our on our gun belt with us. But improve safety for personnel and the public. The deputy chief went into, injured wildlife, especially injured bears, being able to find them, whether it's from a poor hunting shot or a traffic accident, locating them. I know personally, I have an incident that happened that sticks out in my mind when I talk about this subject is trapping a sow that was severely habituated and food conditioned up near Gold Bar off Highway 2. And it was a dark, stormy night type thing. You know, it was one of those things where there were so many bears habituated in this area from these people with loads of cat food that the wind was blowing. It was pouring down rain. I set the trap. The landowner called me. By the time I hit the highway, it was under 17 minutes. I had a bear in the trap, and so I had to go right back to it. There were multiple boars that were coming after this bear that was in heat, and they were also habituated in food condition. It's dark, it's windy, it's rainy, the bears are black. They're trying to get at this bear that I have immobilized. That one instance is worth any cost at all of this dog being with me. And it saved, it just made the situation possible without having, you'd have to have probably a half dozen officers to make that situation safe, but I can do it by myself with my dog now. So that doesn't happen every day, and that's kind of a dramatic example, but it does happen occasionally. So locating injured wildlife and orphaned wildlife, we talked about injured wildlife, and there's lots of different applications there, but orphaned wildlife, I believe last year alone, Rich may correct me on this, but I think our Carilians handled 28 orphaned bear cubs last year. Whether it's some of it was in capturing, getting them after they're orphaned, and then getting the rehabbers, and then the releasing and breaking any habituation or food conditioning that occurred during rehabilitation. Now, they've also, there's been several occurrences over the past several years where our dogs have located orphaned lion kittens and cougar kittens, and I agree some of you may have the same stance, and some of the public does too. It's like, well, why don't you just let nature take its course or kill those or euthanize those animals? We have a segment of our population, a growing segment, that's possibly in some ways better educated and more demanding and more progressive, and agrees that and believes strongly, and we'll hear from it if we don't. If they get wind of any of this, we have to take care of the individual animals and look out for their best interest. And these dogs give us a lot of credibility with the broader constituency than we had before. I get people all the time coming up to me saying, well, we'll tell you things now, and we'll come and talk to you and let you know when things are going on, because before we wouldn't, because we thought you were all just a bunch of dumb rednecks and killed everything. I don't know how many times I've heard that in the field. But so it's refreshing to hear reaching out and having positive interactions with a much larger portion of the population now. So there's also a lot of biological and research work these dogs are being used for, especially Cash over there. He's a real superstar with Rich. I'm not even going to begin to get into all the fantastic work that they've done, because I don't necessarily understand or even know what they do from a day-to-day basis, but I've been privy, and along with a couple of their stuff where they've been capturing a lion or something. I know Rich has the versatility of being able to capture a research animal or recapture it to change a battery or something on his own, or in a pinch he's got that dog right with him. I'm sure he likes to have some backup sometimes, but if he needs it, he's there, and he's able to accomplish a lot of other things he wouldn't be able to. Public outreach, classrooms, and public presentations. These dogs are definitely ambassadors for wildlife. They're ambassadors for the agency. Everybody loves a fuzzy puppy. They just leave the agency with so much positive press and PR that it's you can't even calculate what's come out of this right now. So one dramatic example of verification and its importance and the utility of the bear dogs is Officer Bruce Richards was called to the hospital in Puyallup one evening. When he got there, there was a couple that had been on a walk, and they were being treated for severe wounds over most of their body. They were pretty scarred up. So Officer Richards, through a short interview, determined the location of this as what they described as a lion attack. They were adamant that they were attacked by a mountain lion outside of town near their house while they're walking. Officer Richards took Mishka to the location, the site of the attack that was described to him, And knowing how Mishka indicates when there's a lion present, Officer Richards was somewhat confused, no comments. But he was worried, why isn't Mishka giving me any indications that there's a lion present here? And he kept working it, ended up all the way back, tracking back to the house, found this pit bull. And it's hard to see in this picture right here, but we have some other photos. The pit bull's covered in blood. The dog, the Krillin, never picked up on any indication that there was a lion there, which gave us a lot of evidence and verification to go back and press these people who I believe eventually admitted, yeah, they were attacked by their own dog. And for love of the animal or, you know, transgressing, I don't know, the damage and the guilt of what happened onto something else, they blamed it on wildlife. But the importance of this is saved us from a negative national media event that had been negative towards our agency possibly, and definitely detrimental towards wildlife or any causes we have there towards, and especially mountain lions. That saved hundreds and hundreds probably of man hours of dealing with this situation. It also saved probably multiple lions from being killed needlessly, and also from inflaming further political acerbations about mountain lions. So these verifications and misrepresenting or wrong diagnosis of what happened, whether it was wildlife versus domestic animal that did the predation or the damage, or the wrong type of wildlife. Whether it was a lot of people want to always blame the more charismatic bear or lion, but a lot of times it's a coyote. And you can tell, I know I can tell with my dog when I'm probably working with coyotes and I'm not working with a bear or a cougar, just by his reaction. I'm like, oh, kind of the evidence on the ground looks a little bit like coyotes, and the dog's saying it's a coyote, so it's probably a coyote. And we've got a really high success rate percentage, and when you work as teams and you have that bond with your dog, so we're getting pretty good at what we do. So locating unlawfully taken wildlife on the upper left, this is a picture of Mishka finding an elk carcass in the Olympic National Park. This bull elk, I believe, was killed the fall before in the park unlawfully. There was 800 plus man hours spent searching for the carcass to match it to the location where it was illegally taken. Mishka went in there, was finally called in with Bruce Richards, and within a couple hours they had the carcass located, DNA was extracted, the case was made, and I believe they got a conviction off that. Lower right's another lion that was unlawfully taken, that Savu was first on scene with, and he found, located. We wouldn't have known about it without the Krillin being there. And we got lots of examples of this. Our dogs, each of our dogs have probably made dozens and dozens of big game cases alone. Most commonly, they're deer cases. I know that's Coulter has made several deer cases. He's started deer cases himself, and he's found evidence needed for the body of the crime for other officers in different counties and neighboring areas. So the versatility is really proving itself there with what we do. So feeding, whether it's intentional or incidental, that's the primary source of what causes us work with the KBDs still. Up in the upper left, in the middle picture, I believe, is from Oysterville out on the coast, where a couple were spending thousands of dollars annually to buy dog food to feed up to a dozen bears. So obviously they were food conditioned and actually habituated in this situation. The Krillin bear dogs were instrumental in catching those bears, and also I believe they were able to, you guys were able to hard release and save a few of those bears?
Yeah, half and half.
Yeah, so they were actually able to save some. Obviously in that situation, it was an extreme situation where it's unlikely that, you know, you'd ever be able to release any of those, but we actually were able to save 50% of them. Normally, those would all be just euthanized bears, just right off the bat. None of them would have a chance, just because somebody took it upon themselves and had the arrogance to feed them over and over again and create a public a public danger. So that's a great success story. Upper right is from the I-90 corridor from Savu and Officer Mosetter, where they fished this bear, little bear, out of a open dumpster. He's just kind of cute sitting there with all that garbage. So lower right is the Highway 2 corridor, overflowing garbage out of an outbuilding. And lower left is is bird feeders. In some of these areas where people are kind of savvy to wildlife, some of our constituents in the Northwest love wildlife, but they're loving it to death, and bird feeders almost become more of a problem than garbage in some neighborhoods. The bears come from miles around to feed on that suet or that seed and that high caloric source. So that's another issue we have. The feeding is just endless. I guess I just showed some of these pictures here just to show the consistency. It's through the state and it's through the world, actually, anywhere there's bears. Some different states and countries have done a really great job of passing laws and rules to help with that. So the hard release is kind of the core behavioral modification action we do with the Carilion bear dogs. Here's a picture of an early hard release with Rocky Spencer again and Mishka and Bruce Richards. I think Rocky used to like to stick Bruce up on top of the trap for some reason. But so this appears to be an off-site hard release. Nowadays we like to do on-site hard releases. So where you have the conflict occurring, where the bear's getting into trouble because somebody left a garbage can or a bird feeder right by their front door, that's where we try to trap that bear. And then that's right where we release that bear now with the Carilions, give us that ability to do that. And through that, we have that behavioral modification. We give them a bad experience. They associate the barking dog. They have projectiles and people's voices yelling at them. They're getting hit by bean bags, and there's pyrotechnics getting going off. And then either on lead or oftentimes if the situation allows it, we'll release the dog too, and we'll push them into cover and teach them boundaries. And these dogs are really good at teaching boundaries. And unlike a hound dog, we can usually stop our dogs. And once they get out there maybe 50, 100 yards, we can stop that dog and bring it back. And so now the bear says, okay. They can start to associate, well, if I go in the front yard or near the garage, that's an unfriendly place. But so now, instead of releasing the bear in another bear's territory somewhere where there's good bear habitat and it's going to be running for its life or getting in conflict or getting in a car accident, it's now able to utilize its same territory. And if it becomes a dominant bear, it stabilizes that bear population there. It doesn't create a void in that territory. We don't have all of the... a bunch of younger sub-adult bears possibly coming in trying to occupy that space and falling into the same cyclic problems of getting in trouble in that garbage and bird feeders and experimenting and creating a much more complaints. So through that we have that's our primary success. And that bear now stays and utilizes its territory. It polices itself, its territory for us, and it's just been hopefully taught to use its territory smarter and more intelligently. Now through this process, I think it's anecdotal, but we have an awful lot of anecdotes now that more often than not we're successful in what we do here with these bears. We do need research, and we need some actual hard numbers to see what our efficacy is and see how we can improve what we do. We have a much smaller sample size. We've done this with a few lions, and we have no information to say that we're helping at all by doing lions. But again, we need research doing that, and we haven't done very many. But we also, on the other hand, we have no information showing us that we've done any harm by doing that or changed the situation or haven't improved the outcome. So basically, we need some answers. And you can see how... when you release a bear under these circumstances, it's getting a great association with not wanting to fall into that same set of circumstances there. And we've had a lot of success stories where bears that have been released get lawfully taken, acting like wild bears maybe a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road, and they're taken by a hunter in a wild situation, and they've been living and contributing to the gene pool and securing that that territory for us. School lockdowns. In Western Washington, it seems like this happens almost on a weekly basis at times now. This paralyzes thousands of people's lives, parents, families, siblings. The school goes shut down. Nobody can concentrate on their studies because somebody saw or thought they saw a bear or a lion outside of a school. So this is happening all the time. We're able to go in there with the Carilion bear dogs. Right off the bat, we can verify whether there's a bear or lion present. And that right there may solve the problem right there alone, where I used to be able to walk around a school and say, well, I don't see a bear or lion. So. But now I'm pretty sure there isn't a bear or lion there, or at least there isn't now. So, you know, let the school, the kids out and let the parents come pick them up, because there's a lot of important people that are associated with all these kids that have lives to get on with. But if there is a bear present or a lion, we can use a single Corellian in these urban corridors or these green belts or in you know, those big, vast playground settings, and where you couldn't release hounds or do anything else, or it's not time practical to set a bunch of traps or dangerous because there's too many people around. We can go out there with a single Corellian or two Corellians, capture that animal in the same afternoon and evening, and be in and out. It's a lot of intensive work. It takes a lot of equipment and a lot of proficiency, but we can be in and out of there, and there's always media coverage. There's oftentimes two or three helicopters flying over with their big eye on you and lots of news trucks around. But we look so professional, like we know what we're doing when we have these dogs, and we actually have some ability to follow through now. So, okay, attacks. Councilman Chalmanac was a dramatic example of that. We don't have very many attacks, but I know we're running out of time here. But Rich Beausoleil and Cash were real stars in that. They were able to get on scene within a couple hours and have the bear euthanized and secured for evidence and to be able to investigate why that happened. Public outreach, again, we have their ambassadors for wildlife. There are tens of thousands of people every year leave with a positive outlook on the agency and on what we're doing and with the dogs. These people will never remember any of our names, but they'll always remember the Carillion bear dog that kissed them, that they got to pet, or they got to walk around an auditorium. Here's just a few of the media outlets that we've had cover some of our actions and presentations. I gave one presentation in Seattle, I know, a few years ago, and it resulted in, got caught on by the media, and it resulted in we ran the numbers on that one, and well over $800,000 of television time and media, positive media time for the agency. I don't know when else we'd ever get that much media time, and if we did, I can assure bet you it would have been negative and not positive. And we could never afford to buy that kind of time and what we've produced through here. So our future needs, we need vet care, we need maintenance, we need equipment, training. KBD retirements, as they get older, Mishka is our oldest dog right now. We got to think about whether or not we want to replace them. There's expenses there. Program expansion, I'm thinking Captain Wharton, after seeing this presentation, wants two or three of these dogs in Spokane. And then we need research done to verify our efficacy of what we're doing and all this work we're doing on the ground, and if nothing else, to point us in a better direction to see what we can change. And so we have some real numbers to talk about. Our funding, currently the KBD program is funded 100% by private donations. They're kept within the enforcement reward account. Handlers are required to secure funds for initial purchase of puppies prior to selection. So we have a lot of volunteers that help us either solicit, have produced merchandise. In fact, we have a box back here. We can, perhaps if we're going to be on a break later, we can pass some of them around. We have brochures that go out and explain how the KBDs are funded and how people can donate. We also have a couple merchandise items that volunteers have created and sell for us, and then the proceeds go back to the KBD fund. We've been limping along for now from time to time, but what we really need in the future to be able to concentrate on the work and be secure is a sustainable funding source. But people have been really supportive and really gracious for what we've done so far. And Bruce is tired and he's done for the day, so at that, I'd like to show you, if we have time, a couple of videos of examples. I don't know if to see kind of what it is we do. Do we have a minute to squeeze them in?
Oh,
okay.
For sure.
I'm sorry for going so long. I didn't realize that I was going to talk so much, maybe. And right here. Do we have speakers? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not going to get to hear the great music.
Put the mic next to the computer speaker.
Oh.
Yeah. So we're telling, so this is a hard release, and we're telling people to yell. We get lots of volunteers, and the hard release allows us to get a lot of the community and the neighborhood involved. And so we get them. I know I try to encourage as many people, kids and neighbors, they come in, they help, they get hands-on with the bear, and they develop an ownership of it. And multiple times when I have a constituent that's adamant that this bear needs to be euthanized and needs to be removed. You can see the beanbags hitting the bear actually there. So, but constituents after that get involved, that are adamant that the bear needs to be euthanized or removed, oftentimes they'll sheepishly call me back a month or two later and say, "Hey, we haven't seen the bear in a while. We just wondering how our bear is doing now." And they take that ownership of it, and so this is the first program I've seen. I've been involved with bears for years, even before I took this job, but we can talk till we're blue in the face about all the things to do and how to live with bears. But this is the first program I've ever seen that actually gets real buy-in, and people can really get behind and actually change the human behaviors too. So I don't know if you can...
A lot of heart. A group of fifth graders raised $25 for a state program. Their gesture moved the recipients so much, they went out of their way to say thank you.
So we have kids donating.
Solar energy will last as long as the sunshine.
Jareen Gabriel's class is studying energy sources, but sometimes the best lessons have nothing to do with a textbook.
Our classroom is like all about animals, and we love animals.
This class used to read to a therapy dog, Amika. She passed away during the school year.
As a part of our healing, I think the kids somehow instinctively realize that giving back and doing something good for other animals is a part of that healing process.
The class found a way to give back when Como News reported that a Carilion bear dog with the wildlife department needed an expensive surgery.
The idea was entirely theirs.
The kids started a penny drive and sent a letter with their $25 donation. The dogs help officers teach bears to stay away from people. The program receives no taxpayer money.
I thought they were important because they're helping the community by helping the bears go away, but not like killing them.
That earned the school a visit from four of the state's six dogs.
We figured we would repay that gesture and bring our dogs in here today and kind of show them what they're supporting.
Holy moly, don't anybody move.
Officers explained how a bear gets accustomed to easy eats from garbage cans and how trapping it and sending it off with a teaches the bear to stay in the woods. It's a wildlife. School that is home of the bears and a caretaker of dogs.
But I love dogs. Like, they're the best things in the world. Like, I cannot possibly say anymore.
If a police officer or firefighter got hurt on the job, you'd expect their department to step up and pay the medical bill. But the problem solvers learned when a wildlife service dog owned by the state was injured at work, there was no taxpayer money for the expensive surgery. When it's time to go nose-to-nose with a wild bear, Carilion bear dog Cash won't back down. He's at the front of the line, pounding through the woods. When a bear gets too close to homes, and when Bellevue City Councilman John Chelmanat was attacked by a bear...
Okay, where's the bear now? I think it's gone. John,
Cash cornered the bear at midnight in the pouring rain so officers could take it down. Today, that hero dog is sidelined by a serious injury. Cash was working in the woods when he tore his ACL. The $4,000 surgery isn't covered by the Fish and Wildlife Department. Even though the state owns the Carilion bear dogs, it doesn't use a penny of taxpayer money. Buying and caring for the dogs comes from donations and out of the handler's pockets.
Yeah, it looks really good. So here's where the bone was cut.
Plates and screws hold Cash's left knee together now, and he is healing well. But the checkup brought bad news, too. Cash also injured his right knee and could be in for another $4,000 surgery.
So in response to
bill
this,
for the original injury was pretty much draining our existing fund source. And with the bad news that we got today, frankly, I don't know where we're going to come up with the money to pay for that.
If there are two surgeries, two recoveries, it could be a year before Cash is back at work.
It's night and day. I mean, the dog is... He's made me a better biologist. He's made me more effective to the agency and to the public.
If you would like to help Cash get back to work, you can make a donation to the Carilion Bear Dog Program. We have all the information for you on our website, comonews.com.
All right, that's all I've got. We got time to let you guys see some of the items we brought and meet the dogs.
How's he doing today?
He's doing great. Members of the commission, thank you. Back to work, and probably three or four cougar captures since, and several bears as well.
How long ago was that?
That was 6 months.
Oh.
So speedy recovery. It's usually 4 to 6 for a dog, but because he was such an athlete, he rebounded quickly.
Commissioner Caney?
Oh, just quick question. Great, great presentation.
Thank you.
When the dogs go on a hard release, do the bears ever turn and fight? And if they do, would the dog just corner the bear or fight? And then also, based on how wolves react, I can't quite see how this could help with wolves, but do you see any way it could?
I know Bruce Richards was talking about some ideas with wolves, but I haven't been able to wrap my head around it very well yet. Maybe there is some, on an individual basis, if you had one individual animal trap, perhaps we could do some sort of hard release with them or habituation. But wolves and the bear dogs, I would tend to think in general we'd want to keep them separate. I don't know. Rich might have some better ideas on that. But as far as the bears during the hard releases, most of them don't turn around. Every now and then, depending on the setup or the, it's usually not so much the bear wants to fight, but depending on the environment that we're releasing in, if there's too wide of an open expanse, perhaps, the bear doesn't like running through that open area because they want to get to cover really fast. It depends on the circumstances and how the vegetation and where we're releasing at, but sometimes they'll turn and try to go through us. It's happened a couple times, but the dogs every time battle that bear down and turn them around and push them just almost flawlessly right where we want to go, and we hit them with a beanbag. So they quickly change the mind of the bear. They're really good at – our dogs are – you wouldn't know it right now. They don't look very dynamic, but they're incredibly they're incredibly agile and can jump around. I know my dog will jump up on top of a 6-foot-high cedar fence and run down it chasing a cat like it's another cat. So it's – they're really good at dancing with the bears. And I know Coulter's been swatted hard once by a bear, and he learned his lesson, and so he's a little more careful now. But they'll go right up. If the bear's not going where they want to or going too slow, they'll go right up and bite the bear and get it moving. So they're incredibly capable animals, where you see hound dogs use sometimes 4, 5, 6 hound dogs, and several of them get tore up when they're chasing bears. Our dogs have a really good record of keeping themselves in one piece and still teaching those boundaries to those bears. So,
just to caveat on that, out of the 130-plus dogs working across the United States, they haven't had a Carilion injured while working with bears, so they have a very good track record.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's a great presentation and certainly a positive outreach on behalf of the agency. Having had Labradors in the past that have been highly trained for field trials and stuff, when you release, you do a hard release on a bear, and you release the dog to follow the bear, is it verbal commands, or do you use a collar to instantly get the dog to come back?
Well, I believe all of us have e-collars, and we use them occasionally through training. I rarely have my dog ever wear his anymore. He'll stop on a verbal command. I don't like using the e-collar, but it is with these dogs, I think, oftentimes a necessary thing, just a few times during a training process to use it. I will put an e-collar on them occasionally in a situation where I think I may need to stop them right away just for safety of possibly a busy roadway or some other circumstance.
Well, once they've felt electricity a time or two, and even if they're just wearing a collar, they know what's on there.
Right. And as our dogs mature, exactly. And a lot of times, maybe that's part of it, too. They think they may have it on, but we put a lot of us have satellite tracking collars, the Garmin tracking collars for our dogs. That way, because in the heavy brush, you know, if they're 10 yards away, you still don't know exactly where they are. So you make sure they're not running out into the chasing the bear out into a busy highway or something.
Thank you.
So you're welcome. Thank you.
I have to ask, who came up with the idea of having someone dress up like a bear and have the kids throw bean bags? That was inspired.
I think that original skit came from the Wind River Bear Institute, that idea, okay. Didn't it? From Carrie Hunt and the Wind River. Yeah, and then we've taken it and probably done some, twisted it around a little bit. And every presentation is a little different. None are the same. That's probably because of our lack of consistency. But they're all, most of them are really fun and educational, and those kids go home with a great take-home message and you know, put pressure on their parents to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
great message. Okay, thanks, guys. Excellent job. Terrific.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it thoroughly.
Can that lady pass out those brochures?
Oh, yeah.
She has a handful.
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah. This is the information about the fund.
Yeah.
These are part of something that the school needs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Incentives.
I don't want to keep this.
You did what happened to your fingers?
Is there a story behind the fender?
Not that glamorous. I just kind of.
Well, I think they really want these back. These are pretty cute.
That's great.
Everybody asked me if I got it, but I wish I could say that.
Great story.
The kids were.
Well, yeah, so the kids from that classroom over there that they made all these cards.
That's
phenomenal.
Yeah.
They're just really great. And then they set up a follow-up donation, too. They raised more
than
some of their follow-up donations. So
you've
fantastic. Really got a terrific program.
You got
it. They're all 3D and pop out.
Oh, yeah.
What a great idea.
What's their diet?
Pardon me?
What's their diet?
They do have kibble. It depends on the dog. Yeah. All the dogs have individual
right.
Feeding habits.
It's a calendar.
It's a choice a lot of times.
In a McDonald's or something.
Yeah. Our bear made it.
Well, I got OnStar.
I hear those are only 10% saving, so I don't know.
Yeah, right. Big slime.
What's the name,
buddy? Are they a long living dog?
No, not yet.
Bloody history of the area. Sometimes it's finished, sometimes it's Russian.
Bring the bear.
Oh, it is?
I need to get all their names and stuff so I can put them in minutes. So I'll send an email.
I'm sure you don't remember.
I'll tell you that.
Thank you. Good job.
I think they said the volunteers put it together.
Better give that.
At the end of the year, I wouldn't be able to use the calendar.
Tell me why I can buy one.
Okay.
We'll have to work on it.
Okay. Thanks very much.